Good morning, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another recording. Welcome to another interesting conversation that we're going to be having today with my guest of honor, Chris Rolfe. And Chris joining me from Boulder, Colorado. It's like, what, 7 o'clock? No, it's 9 o'clock in the morning for you, isn't it?
It's actually 10 a.m.
Oh, is it 10? Oh, you're not on Pacific time. You're on Mountain time. Yeah. I want to welcome everybody to the Localization Fireside Chat. We do have interesting conversations happening on this channel quite frequently now. We do these conversations almost on a more frequent basis, almost like 10 a week now we do. So if you are interested in becoming a guest on the channel, I welcome every opinion. I welcome all your discussions to the channel. If you are, you have something you want to express or you want to contribute to the conversation, please hit me up and I'd love to host you as a guest. Again, my guest today, we've been exchanging emails on trying to arrange and coordinate this particular podcast. And I was going through the profile. I will let him tell his story very shortly here. And the topic of the hour today is going to be marketing in general, but more precisely, we're going to be talking about generative engine optimization, that's GEO. And I know we've covered this before on the channel, but I'm always interested because such a technology that's so promising, I'm always interested in understanding how others are using it and what kind of feedback are they seeing in the market, what kind of customer reaction they're seeing in the market, and what kind of success they're having with GEO. So without any further ado, and let's get started with the conversation. Before I get started, by the way, for the audience, this being live streamed on LinkedIn, by the way, and feel free to interact with the live stream. Feel free to send us your questions, comments, etc. I'll keep an eye on your questions here. I'll try to address them in the conversation as they come up, if any. And or if you do not catch the live stream, that's fine. We're going to do a publication later and I'll broadcast all that on the Localization Fireside Chat page and my personal profile. Let's get into it. Chris, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you so much for having me, Robin. I've been looking forward to this conversation, I think, for 2 or 3 weeks now.
I really appreciate having you with me. And I couldn't be more thrilled than to engage in such a conversation that's important today. One of the familiar questions to the audience would be is that everybody's got a personal journey, Chris. If you don't mind, for those who don't know you from the audience, if you don't mind, walk us through your personal journey. What got you here?
Yeah, so I got into SEO before Google was called Google. I'm actually really old. That was back in 95, 96. I was getting a marketing business degree and one of my teachers, you know, came to class and like, hey, this company is rebranding from Backrub to Google. It's a big deal. Back then, the big search engine was Alta Vista. So that's when I got into
I remember Alta Vista. Wow, what's the name?
Oh my God. So that's how I got into search engine optimization. I got fascinated by how these search engines surface the right kind of content, right? And it was just fascinating to me. The entire industry evolved, you know, as of the mid late 90s. And I'm so happy that I was part of that evolving, you know, new industry. I taught myself how to code, you know, everything that I needed to know about search engine optimization. So I always been in marketing, and SEO was always a big part of what I did at the companies that I worked for. So I built my knowledge over, you know, I guess decades. And then eventually, about 15 years ago, I've had enough of being an employee. I started a business called Boulder SEO Marketing. We're still running that agency. And we are now actually an AI agency that happens to do SEO, content marketing, generative engine optimization. So I think we'll talk more about that, right? So we have evolved the company quite dramatically over the last 2-3 years since ChatGPT launched. immediately I knew that everything is going to change in my industry, but also obviously in, you know, the language industry and many, many, many other industries. I think 1 month after ChatGPT launched, Gala Global, the industry association, reached out to me and asked me to do a webinar on how AI is changing global digital marketing. I kid you not, I spent about 120 hours watching YouTube videos. It was a brand new industry, AI. So I just watched everything that I could watch and I got fascinated by it. And I started to understand, obviously, the profoundness of how this technology is going to change everything. And luckily, I started to establish myself as an AI SEO expert. So I think globally, if you do a search in Google for AI SEO expert, you'll find my personal website at the very top, or international AI SEO expert. So I get to speak globally now about this topic. I just spoke in Berlin yesterday. Luckily here, there was a conference in Denver. So I love what I do. It's finally interesting again. And I cannot wait to see what's going to happen over the next few years. Yeah, so that's a little bit about my story.
Exciting time, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah.
It's very exciting right now with all what we've seen in front of us. It's. I feel like the opportunity is immense and tremendous amount of opportunities out there. I know every time you turn around and you ask people or you have a conversation with people, it's always a gloom and doom kind of thing that AI is going to take over. People are being laid off, etc. But I don't view it that way. I view the possibility of things. And this is going to create a huge amount of possibilities for us, humanity in general. Now, for the audience who are interested in the, you know, it's called the Localization Fireside Chat, our channel. So they're interested in the language piece. And by the way, for the audience, Chris has spent some time in the localization. Hopefully, I'm not breaking any news here. In the localization world, back in the year 2000, now that's many years ago.
Yeah.
And up to 2004 or 5, I think, he worked at Lionbridge a little bit. And then he also worked at RWS a little bit as well in a business development capacity. So he's not stranger to the localization world. I'm not, you know, I mean, he's always, I think when you get into the localization industry and you probably end up doing other things, I mean, it's always stays with you. Our experiences. So before we, I thought to mention that to the audience.
Yeah,
it's a good angle. Chris, you have been in the search for almost 30 years now. I mean, as you mentioned earlier. And before we got into Geo, tell us a little bit about where it all started. You mentioned Alta Vista, but what drew you into the digital search, if you will, from what you've been doing? Why was it so intriguing to you?
Yeah, good question. So back then, I worked for a U.S. financial corporation at the Zurich, Switzerland office. And the U.S. office in Washington, they created a new thing called a website, right? And we sent them the content in German over to the U.S. And guess what they did? They hard-coded the content into images. That's when I started to think about how can these search engines identify the content, you know, which is obviously critically important for a website to rank. So this is how I essentially got into search engine optimization. We, you know, obviously redid the website, content couldn't be hard coded. So that's how I got into search engine optimization. I started to think about, you know, what will get websites to show at the top in, you know, Alta Vista, Google at that point then. And then, you know, back then link building was still like the most important thing. So obviously the algorithm has evolved over the last 30 years and it's been fascinating to me to be part of this evolution. I knew back then, right, this is going to an industry that's going to grow so dramatically. I saw that and I wanted to be part of this industry because if an industry grows, there's immense opportunity for, you know, job growth to make money. It's for me, it's not about money. Though, you know, I like the money I make with what we're doing here at Boulder SEO Marketing and Chris Ralph AI SEO. And this industry search continues to grow as we, you know, as we have a bigger population on Earth, as technology evolves. So it's truly been a fascinating space for me to be in. I think it's one of those industries that potentially proportionally has evolved more and more interestingly than, you know, other industries. Yeah, that's why I was about 10 years in the localization industry. And at some point I, you know, I'm like, hey, I got to make a switch. My passion is search engine optimization. That's when I got in, out of the localization industry and I started my own business.
And, do you, like, from your experience, based on your experience, and you spent some time in the localization early on in your career, did that help you? Did that shape your approach? Or did that make you understand the search a little bit better? Or no?
Yeah, that is a great question. So both you and I and the language industry, we're in the business of content, right? If you look at it, we're in the business of making content available to people in the right language on the right platform. So definitely having been in the localization industry has helped me tremendously being successful in the search industry, because you got to write content in certain ways that it not only resonates with people, but it also has to be ready to be discovered by search. And that really resonated with me, having been in the localization industry, was sort of like the catapult for me to get, you know, start my own business in search. Because sadly, what I saw is that a lot of the content that we localized, created in other languages, was not properly optimized for search. And I tried to bring that to the attention of, you know, those very big companies. And they simply wouldn't want to deal with it. So I finally had it. I'm like, you know what? If you spend so much money creating content in so many languages, like, might as well make it, you know, so that the content can be found online through even the most basic search engine optimization strategies will do it. I'm not going to name the name of the company, but I did a webinar with one of the biggest tech companies on developing content for help systems. And the person that I did the webinar with got it, right? If you can use help system content to surface at the top in the search engines, you know, it's going to reduce the cost in terms of call center volume, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of overlap in terms of localization and search. Sadly, you know, I just spoke at a conference in Berlin, and I don't think the language industry is catching up as fast as they should. So that's why I'm always happy to go back to industry, language industry conferences where, you know, I can share my knowledge and hopefully encourage people to do more and better in terms of getting that content to show up in search.
You know, you bring a very valid point, Chris. Thanks for the answer. Is that the localization industry is less focused on outcome of our content. And that's, I think that's where you're getting at.
Yeah.
Versus just, it's a service. You asked me to translate. I've translated it. Here it is. What happened to it after that? Not my job. But that is, I want to say, dramatically and very fast eroding. That's going to go away. If we're not outcome focused, what is happening with the content? Is it achieving what it needs to achieve? Is it getting the results that needs to be getting at the end of the day? Whatever the results are, commercialization, you know, conversion in a website, increasing sales, increasing exposure, whatever the outcome, intended outcome is, the content has to deliver something. Localization and obviously marketing from your side, it has to connect to the business. If it's not connected to the business in terms of outcomes, then why are we doing it?
Look, I think unfortunately, the language industry is very slow in adapting to new technologies or changes that's happening. And I spoke at a conference in Spain last year where I sort of ripped off the Band-Aid in front of a lot of people. And
that must have been painful.
Well, not for me.
No, for the audience I'm talking about.
Yeah, and luckily, I think most of the people got it. They understood it, and they came to me and thanked me for being honest about it. But then there was about, 20-30% that were very offended by what I told them was going to happen to the industry and their job. Right. But I felt I had to do that because my job is not, just make money with this, but also inform people that they need to get on it and change their business model. So a lot of localization companies, even translators, they're under immense pressure by this technology, right? They need to adapt. An easy way to differentiate themselves is to offer international multilingual search engine optimization. They are the best people to do that because they understand, obviously, the language industry. And it's not rocket science, believe me, to learn the basics of international multilingual search engine optimization. It's something that every company needs because at the end of the day, businesses, they want leads and sales. And you get that through people finding your content, your website, in search, whether it's traditional Google or now even more large language models, it's all about content, right? Making the content readily available so that they're properly optimized for the right keywords. The keywords have to be transcreated, not just translated. This is an immense, incredible opportunity for the language industry to really pivot a little bit. Some people that I spoke with at that conference in Spain got it. There are a few, I'm not going to name names, but there's a translator in Italy. She completely pivoted her business. She is doing so amazing. I follow her on LinkedIn. I'm so impressed. She's one of these people that got it, right? Took advantage of what I told them. And yeah, unfortunately, other people, they're not as fast in adapting to the new reality that we're living in. Oh, Robin, I think you're muted. I think you hit that mute button there.
It's what happens, especially when you're doing live sessions. That happens all the time. No, you founded Boulder SEO Marketing in 2009. How's that agency had to reinvent itself as search technology evolved and as the business has evolved? What stages did you have to go through?
Yeah. So I started this business as a local SEO company. I thought, there's so many local businesses that need help. They have no idea how to do this SEO stuff. Then ironically, the first client was a localization company in Israel. So went international, and then I think we signed on some national clients and eventually local clients. So just that alone, right? I thought I was, building a local SEO company. I was like an international SEO company, multilingual SEO company right away. So that was a great experience. It broadened my spectrum of, the world. There's so much business out there. So I did that for the first 3-4 years, grew my team to about 4, 5, 6 people, and then got remarried and then blended family, 5 kids. I had to put my business on hold. So I just did lead generation. I optimized the heck of my own website. I did sales, sold leads to other agencies. And then about 5-6 years ago, I teamed up with my business partner, Daniel Burns, who ran a web design agency in LA for 20 years. He moved to Boulder. And then that really added fuel to what we were capable of doing. I'm not a web designer. I'm really good at, AI SEO, or back then SEO. We decided that we're going to grow this agency very rapidly. Unfortunately, a little bit too rapidly. So I learned the hard way. We grew way too fast, made sadly many mistakes, unfortunately. Made some bad mistakes that I'm not happy with. I'm a perfectionist. So, you know, I had to have really hard conversations with clients where we under delivered. And I promised to myself, this is something I will never, ever do again. So we learned from that mistake. We grew the business slower. We hired the right kind of people. And then obviously as the algorithm evolved, you know, we evolved our methodology, our systems. We created trademark methodologies such as the micro SEO methodology. That's now the core of our AI SEO system that we're building. So that was more the traditional SEO time. And then ChatGPT launched. And, you know, as I mentioned before, I knew this is an opportunity of a lifetime. So I spent about 6 days prompt engineering, building a system that I took to my business partner and said, hey, we need to build a software. This is the system. This is what it needs to do. So basically generative engine optimization, because people, they're going to want to be found in platforms like ChatGPT, Claude, Perplexity, et cetera, et cetera. So I immediately understood that, right? And I think we were one of the first, you know, agencies that started talk about generative engine optimization. Back then, the term was not even coined, but I did webinars on how to get into these platforms. And I'm happy to announce that we are going to launch a SaaS system, a GEO SaaS system, because there's so much demand from bigger companies that have a marketing department, but they don't have the knowledge on how to implement the GEO strategy methodology. And we already have a wait list of, you know, clients that want to use that SaaS.
Oh, wow. System. Congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're beta testing now. We have a few companies that are, you know, they have to break the system as fast as they can so that we can get it ready to launch it out there in the market, because basically the globe is our market, right? There's so much demand for it. I don't think anything like it exists yet. So we have evolved. We're now an AI agency. I have, I think, 4 full-time developers that are building the system. We're still a services company, but we continue to evolve as obviously this technology continues to evolve very, very, very rapidly.
Now for, you know, first I want to congratulate you on the success and the software and the beta testing that has taken place. It sounds very promising. It sounds like you're solving a big business problem for many companies out there. And you're right. A geo is still misunderstood. Everybody knew how to deal, I think, knew how to deal with the search part if you're using traditional search engines. But geo is adding a, I want to say, another dimension to the entire foundability or visibility, if you will. Everybody's trying to compete for that top ranking on Google. But now, I guess, the field is much wider. You've got many engines. Each one of them has got its own algorithm, logics, et cetera. So you've got to cover the gamut. Now, for those who are perhaps, you know, not too familiar, from a basics perspective, what is a generative engine optimization? And in, you know, very simplistic way, what problem does it solve?
Yeah. So 80% of GEO, it's the old SEO, right? You got to know your keywords, you got to do your meta tags, schema, tech, SEO stuff. It's the same old, same old. So do that really well. But then the 20% that's going to get you the 80% of the results in the large language models, that's like the GEO stuff, right? That means you're going to have to, I'll explain it in very, very simple terms. Okay. So we create the most authoritative, most complete piece of content that it's not a, you know, the top 10 things people can do to do this. It's very, this is how I do it. This is personal experience. This is, you know, this piece of content will help you solve a very specific problem. So we create for every client, we create a basically a micro language model for them, where we grab all of the net content that they have created, such as if they have a podcast, we're going to take all the transcripts, we feed it into that AI system. If they have written books, it's going to get fed into that AI system. So basically, we create a virtual copy of them that has real net new content associated with these clients, because then we can use our AI system to actually create outlines and even content that, yeah, it's AI generated content, but it feeds on net new content that was created by these people or by a company, right? Then we create the ultimate best piece of content. One example on our website, if you do a search for SEO price guide, SEO price guide, you should see a guide written by me using our system that ranks at the top in Google and in these AI overviews. So that's a piece, an example that anybody can look up right now. So we create the ultimate piece of content in relation to specific search terms. Mm-hmm. And then we use our AI system to slice and dice it to get into the big six. The big six are YouTube, LinkedIn, Reddit, Quora, Medium, Google Business Profile. These are the systems where these large language models feed on the most in general, right? That means if we do a good job with the slicing and dicing and putting content into these places, there's a good chance that these systems will discover on this content. Thus, they're going to reference them in their content, you know, include a link, etc. Also, digital PR is still critically important, where we could completely control the narrative. When we do a piece, you know, like the SEO price guide, we do a press release, you know, we launched, and these systems, they look for relevant information in relation to certain search terms or what people are searching for. Basically, in a nutshell, that's how GEO works. Yeah.
You know, and for the audience, I mean, things are shifting. I'm hearing a lot more about GEO, and we've talked about GEO on this channel several times with several key stakeholders and with expertise. Similar to what Chris is discussing right now. But to people who are wondering out there, Chris, how fast is this shift happening between the traditional SEO to GEO? Is there a number out there? Is there a way to measure that? How fast the shift is happening?
So yesterday I spoke at a conference here in Denver. There were about maybe 70, 80 people in the audience. And I always do the exercise where everybody has to stand up. And then if the answer is no, they get to sit down, right? So out of, let's say, 80 people, I think at the end, there were like 4 people standing that are actually doing something similar, like we're doing, that are doing some sort of GEO, right? It's very alarming, because if you don't switch how you do things, you're behind. When I spoke in Germany, same thing. It's usually, I would say, maybe 5% understand the importance of GEO at this point. I predict that a lot of SEO agencies, they will go out of business because they don't get it. They're still trying to do the traditional SEO stuff that people are smart, right? We're getting asked about, hey, tell me, it's not, are you doing GEO? It's like, hey, how do you do GEO? Explain how you do GEO. And just from like 9 months ago, has completely changed. Back then, they were like, hey, are you doing AI search? Now it's like, how you do it, right? So if you're a traditional agency, you got to do something, otherwise you're going to be out of business. And like, luckily, we're so well positioned at this point. Like, we have basically a wait list of people wanting to work with us.
Now, Chris, not every strategy succeed, and as you know, some of them they work, some of them don't.
Yeah.
If a company, as you said, and I have another flip to that question, another side to this question, if a company decide, for instance, Chris, to go to follow the geo strategy and implement it, there are signs that probably says this is working, and there are signs that probably says this is not working. And can you give the audience a little bit of a heads up on what's working? What are the signs that your geo strategy is working versus not working?
Yeah. So for us, we started implement a geo strategy about 2 years ago. Now, I would say nearly 50%, if not more, of all the leads that we get, they come from ChatGPT, Claude, Perplexity, Gemini. So that's a clear sign it's working, right?
Somebody's searching for you in these engines.
Oh, yeah. You know, they're now, you know, show me AI SEO agencies that deploy geo strategies specific for a, you know, the plumber or whatever. Obviously, we have developed content using our methodology to specifically talk to this audience, right? So we're getting about 50% of our leads now through large language models. So that's one indicator that it's working. And then we're getting about 200% more leads in general, simply because we are creating the right kind of content that it is getting us in front of the right people. So tracking the success is still a bit of a challenge out there, especially I think a lot of people that are trying to track how they rank in these large language models. Everybody is searching a different way. We're now talking to these systems, right? So this back in the day, people would search for SEO price guide, right?
Yep.
Now people are asking, I am a plumber in Boulder, Colorado, and I have a new website. I am interested in understanding how search engine optimization works, and I also like to implement AI into getting found in ChatGPT, right? That's now the keyword that people are using. So you got to have specific content on your website developed for these specific large language models to show up in front of that person. So there are tools such as SE ranking, and I'll share a link with you. I'm a brand ambassador for that company. I don't make money. They give my students at the
university. If you give us the link, we'll share it with you.
Yeah. They give my students free access, so I like to promote them. They have a very interesting AI search tracking system. It's where you see an increase in visibility for your brand and your website. That's a great way to track if this is working or not. At the end of the day, I don't even really pay a lot of attention to that. What I care about, leads and sales, right?
Yeah. You need to increase the top line.
Yeah, that's it. But obviously for our clients, you know, we need to show them how their brand is getting referenced more and more, etc. So obviously we do that. For me, I know we're doing the right thing. We're getting more leads that we can, you know, handle. So, yeah.
I know you talked before, Chris, about dual strategy, geo and advanced SEO. Yeah. Where do you stand on that?
It's one thing. At this point, I would say it's geo. People still like to use the term SEO. The Google team, John Mueller, just spoke about this. I think it was John Mueller on Search Off the Record, the Google podcast, where they talk to SEOs like us. You know, it's whether call it SEO or geo, you just have to do the 20% that, you know, 2-3 years ago did not exist. You have to do that now in addition to all the other things. So it's not SEO or geo. It's just like you got to do everything that's going to get you into these large language models and also get you to be found in traditional search.
Now, let's move a little bit about how does the, let's say, the LLM or the large language model behave when it's starting to take a look at decisions. So large LLM decides to cite a certain brand,
yeah,
or mention a certain brand or a company in their response. what is it actually it's looking for, like in its data structure? It must be looking for something in its, because it's all going to be referenced in its training data. And what signals do you think make a source citation worthy?
Yep. So two of the most important things that anybody who has a business or is in charge of marketing for a business need to do, they got to build, they got to work on the domain authority, domain trust of a website. You can use tools like SE Ranking to check what the domain authority is. It's usually a number out of 100. It's basically a credit score of a website, right? If you want to buy a house, if your credit is really high, really good, you're going to get a better interest rate. It's exactly the same model that these search engines are looking at. You know, is this a trustworthy company? So you got to do digital PR. You got to be out there. You got to do podcasts like we're doing right now. This is what these search engines are looking at. So build the domain authority of your website. And then the most important thing for you to have a chance to show up in AI search and traditional search is called the EEAT score of a person.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about this
one. Yeah, so that stands for experience, expertise, authoritativeness, trustworthiness. Because so many people are publishing crap content that's, you know, done, just they go to, you know, one of these large language models and they're like, hey, write a blog post about this. And then they put it up. They're not going to want to spend money on indexing and, you know, that content in their server farms. It costs a lot of money. So these search engines, they look at who's the author behind the piece of content, obviously the quality of the content. And if you have those two things, you will do well in not just only traditional search, but also in AI search. Luckily, because I've been doing this for 30 years, my EEAT score is through the roof. I kid you not. When I publish a piece of content, it will usually rank within 24 to 40 hours.
Congratulations, Chris. Yeah. This is amazing. Congratulations. Yeah.
But it's not rocket science, right? I understood that from the very beginning. So Google and these other engines, they look at entities. Those are things, people, you know, things that are relevant for them to index and surface. Yeah. Yep. So it's all about entity optimization, and you, the person, is like the most important entity that you can build up.
For those who are still stuck on the edge of this SEO versus geo, how much of the traditional SEO carry over to geo? Does any of it carry over? No?
So it's the 80%, what used to be.
And you have to do the 20%?
Yeah, that's you still have to do that, right? I would say drop the link building. It's against the Google Webmaster Guidelines anyhow. Those links should be created naturally through creating high quality content. But what has changed dramatically, and I didn't think this would happen in my lifetime, we're actually optimizing for brand names. Right? Brand recognition, critically important. So we not only optimize for search terms and keywords, etc., we're actually, you know, it goes back to the domain authority. We're making sure that we do a lot of digital PR for our clients where we talk about, you know, Joe the plumber in Boulder. He's the absolute authority because he has this knowledge. He's been doing it for 20 years. Yeah, he neglected doing self-promotion about his business forever. But this is very important. You need to build your brand equity and put it out there into the digital space so that these search engines understand who you are and what you do. That's critically important.
And you've talked also about the idea of digital footprint that is mattering more than domain in age in an LLM area, right? Yeah. So there's digital footprints versus domain. What does a strong digital footprint look like in your opinion, and how do you build it deliberately?
Yeah, so I am the face of our businesses. So I get invited to speak on podcasts like yours. This is a gold mine.
We appreciate having you as a guest, by the way.
Thank you so much for having me. This is what YouTube, okay, the most important platform if you want to get into Google-related AI search. These AI overviews, AI mode, it's the most cited platform because they now look at the transcripts of the conversation that we have. And if you take a look at, you know, the AI overview results, I guarantee you, you're going to see YouTube as a source nonstop. So that's one way. Podcasts. We're trying to do podcasts for our clients now, or at least get them to do YouTube videos. We're actually going to use the help of AI to create YouTube videos for them. We're going to create avatars using tools like HN and 11 Labs to do that, where we create transcripts, from their virtual them. So it's not just crappy AI content, but because YouTube is so important for the digital footprint, you got to do it. Then LinkedIn. You may have seen my content on LinkedIn. I live on LinkedIn. LinkedIn was bought by Microsoft. Microsoft, major investor in OpenAI, parent company of ChatGPT. It's one of the most cited resources in ChatGPT. That's why we're getting so many leads from ChatGPT. That's when I spoke about the big six before. You got to be in those platforms. This is where you need to establish your digital footprint.
And you know, you bring a very, very interesting point. The when you create content, and I think that's where you're getting at, when you create content that lives longer, because every piece of content has got a, I'm assuming it's got a bit of an expiry date in terms of not it will be deleted, but the I want to say the validity of it. How long? It's like taking a food from the fridge. When you take it from the fridge, it's fresh. You leave it on the counter, it goes bad. Not to that extent, but in that sense that the and that's why there's so many people like, you know, we only have so much time to read things or to capture content. And we only tend to look at the top of the stack kind of content, content that it's either brand new, just came in. I'd like to know what that is. And attention span, obviously, is short. So a lot of people are now realizing this and they're saying, okay, how do I create that? And you mentioned YouTube. It's pretty interesting because I started this podcast about 3 years ago. This June, I'm celebrating the third year. And it is amazing the amount of trajectory, this personal initiative I started as a, you know, no company behind me, it's just me. And I started it from basically recording a small YouTube video and hope and prayer, and I didn't know anybody would be watching this stuff. And so now we're into an area where I'm seeing close to 2.5 million viewers on a 7-day rotation.
Wow.
And about 150,000 downloads so far, and that's only been 6 months since I adopted a new platform for the audio piece. And so we're averaging about 1,200 downloads a day. So, but when I started, I was hoping like, what, 10 views per YouTube videos? You know, only my friends and family. But what I noticed also, like every YouTube overview podcast I create about 30 pieces of content on YouTube, like short videos, long videos, etc. Those are always being quoted and people are referencing them and people are going back and viewing them. I can tell from the number of views. It looks like the audience wants something authentic, something that they can relate to, which brings me to my next question. People realizing that content is a king still, authentic content is a king. Now, they're trying to corner cut this thing. And in some cases, I've seen some bad quality AI out there. Most companies are using AI to create content, but you have suggested generic AI or generated AI content that can actually hurt your geo. So you got to have good content. Otherwise, geo's got to ignore it, I'm assuming.
Well, I mean, congratulations, right? What you have built is being seen as excellent content that serves a purpose, that specifically talks to a very specific target audience, right? Let me start by saying that a lot of our clients, they have no idea who their target audience is. And oftentimes we start businesses without really understanding who is it that we want to serve and how do we best communicate with this audience, right? So what I recommend, you know, before you start a podcast, and I'm not sure if you did that, create your ICPs, your ideal customer profiles, right? And then you can build a messaging strategy based on, and nowadays you can use AI, obviously, to create that entire flow of ICP strategy, topics they're interested in. That's what I recommend. That's what we try to do for our clients now, right? Where it's laser focused. The more focused you are with your content, the better the chance that the search engines will surface your content to the right audience. Obviously, you've done a very good job, right? In that these search engines are organically surfacing the right your content to the right people out there. Obviously, you know, hopefully like this podcast here is of high quality and people continue to like what we discuss here. This is what it's all about. Like I, you know, we're sharing fully up-to-date information on what's happening today in our space. And there's a lot of people, especially on the topic that you are talking about, it's highly relevant, right? And you talk to really high-end people, you know, not, well, I guess I'm also...
You're part of that.
Yeah. You're talking to the right people that are people like me that are excited about what they do. They are willing to share whatever they know. This is what we need to do. There's so much crap content out there that's salesy that we want to force on people. No. Like we're in control, right? We're searching for the kind of content that will help us solve a problem, issue, or excites us. And yeah, this is what is going to work. Yeah.
100%. Now, the I don't know if I told you, I mean, anecdotally, and I'm saying that to you and to the audience, I do. I used to work for a large corporation. I used to work for Lionbridge, for most of you guys who knows. And I left that job in November in 2025. So... and now I have a small consulting company called N49 Networks, in addition to running the podcast, which the podcast now grew to its own community now. From the podcast now, it mushroomed another idea. It created another idea called the AI Exchange Networking Event, which takes place on Fridays, where global leaders from around the world, they come in. Cool. We have about 80 people in it. They come in. Sometimes we get like 20 people coming online, depends if people have meetings or other things. But this is where real practical use cases are being discussed. I tried this, it worked. I tried the other thing, it did not work. You know, and this just, again, got created from the ecosystem that we created through the podcast, that I created through the podcast. People notice that through the podcast, I'm talking a lot about AI, where does it apply? Who uses it? What is the best way to do it, to use AI in our world? So from there, people started saying to me, well, why don't we create something that we can all use on a, you know, weekly basis, hence the AI Exchange. Now, you mentioned a very interesting point, which is the ICP. Now, I do, through the N49 network, I do fractional CRO, and I provide a fractional CRO to various people, various companies out there. And it hits me all the time when I ask the question, who's your ideal customer profile? Even though they know, but they have a hard time articulating it, Chris. They have a hard time framing it in a way that you can actually use it. They know what they want, but they have not yet figured out how to put it in words.
So yesterday I spoke at, and I think I can say it because it's a public event, and the recording of my session will be put up on the Chris Ralph website at the Colorado Ski Country USA, where we had a terrible winter here in Colorado. I only got 8 days of skiing in, usually, you know, 20 to 30. It is terrible, terrible, terrible. A lot of people are not renewing their season passes, including myself. I got just a 7 or 8 day Aspen Flex pass, a lot less money. We got sapped, right? A lot of people got sapped. So I spoke in front of the people that are in charge of communication for the ski resorts. They have a big problem, right? A lot of people created user-generated content on how terrible the ski season was, how expensive their pass was, because they only got 5 to 7 days of skiing in, right? So one of the polls that I did is like, hey, who actually has created the ICP? You know, and obviously for the presentation, I created 4 or 5 example ICPs. You know, the warrior, they're going to get a ski pass no matter what. They will, even if the globe is a desert, they're going to find a patch of snow. They will ski. Best season ever, right? But then the weekend warrior, those are people that got hit like us, right? They're sitting it out. So, and I created 4 or 5 ICPs for them, and then the subsequent communication strategy. This is how you need to communicate with these people. This is how you need to go into, you know, the Reddit posts where they're complaining about, you know, the terrible season, so that you can specifically address their worries, you know, potentially give them reasons to buy a pass for next season. And the reality, the fact of the matter is, like, very, very few people actually had created ICPs. There was a lack of communication strategy. To me, it's just normal that you have to do that if you want to run a successful business. Might as well know who your target audience is and how you need to communicate with them. The reality is that a lot of businesses, they don't do that. And then all of a sudden they're surprised that their communication strategy is not working. So again, if you want to check out that presentation, I recorded it. It's going to be up on
your website.
Yeah, it's going to be on the chrisrolf.com website on the blog. Okay. It was good. It was a good eye-opener, I think, for many people. We gave them some interesting thoughts, tips, best practices that they hopefully will implement. It's not rocket science. We do it for us and, you know, for our clients as good as we can. It works. It's simple. Just do it, right?
Now, Chris, speaking of ICP, and I want to ask you this. So who is your ICP in this case? Who is the ICP for Boulder SEO Marketing?
Yeah. So we used to be everything to everybody. I told you, first client in Israel, then national, then local. You know what? There's so many local businesses in Colorado. I like to actually meet people for a coffee or a beer. So we completely rebranded the business. You know what? We are a local services SEO company that likes to work, you know, with businesses in Colorado. Obviously, we also work with local service businesses all over the US. But if I have the opportunity to meet with somebody for coffee, have a nice chat, that makes me happy, the other person happy. It's in this, you know, life that we live in now, everything is online. I actually enjoy meeting in person. You know, I wish we could have done this conversation.
100%. I'd love that.
Yeah, way better. So just for my own sanity, we had to rebrand the company. We're now Colorado's top local service businesses SEO company, because we're really good at that. We even bring the AI aspect to the local service businesses, which a lot of local service business cannot afford to work with somebody like us. We have figured it out. So we excel at working with local service businesses that are not ranking currently at the top in Google and in AI search. They're not getting leads and sales. That's the problem that we help solve.
So if somebody of our listeners, for instance, they happen to be, I don't know, say Spain, and they want to do business with you, can they do business with you, or you're specifically talking about Boulder?
No, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. That's more under the Chris Rolf AI SEO brand. Obviously, okay. I now have, you know, a big team of people that do the work. While, you know, we do a lot of local SEO, obviously, we also know how to do national and international SEO.
Yeah. Yeah, just as an example, like, I'll be interested in trying to figure out if, you know, with you and your team, for instance, I'm a small consulting company, just myself, I guess, trying to figure out how can I get the brand up a little bit and, you know, be visible out there. Wondering if there is anything you guys can help us out with, just on my own example, and perhaps maybe some of my community out there will probably be taking that as a notice yeah. and see what they can do out there.
So we, I'll be sharing the links with you to our AI SEO webinar that we recorded earlier this year. So that's a great resource, right? Even if you just want to dabble in this a little bit yourself. And then I'm also going to share the local SEO webinar recording with you.
Yep.
And then we also, I do a AI SEO and GEO online summit. I try to do it once a quarter. The next one is probably going to happen in the fall. So we do a lot of educational content. And then if somebody wants to hire us, usually we operate within 2,000 to 5,000 per month. So that's our sweet spot.
In that domain, yeah.
Yeah.
Now let's bring this back to what I call home, which is the localization side of things and the localization audience. So let's say a translation agency is listening to this right now, or localization agency. And, you know, the industry, as you're probably aware, are going through huge transformation.
Yeah.
And everybody is worried about one thing. How do I increase my revenue, or how do I stop my revenue from going down like crazy? So what's your advice and how to fix that? Is there anything you can help them with?
Yeah. So immediately you need to learn the basics of international multilingual SEO. Don't just translate localized content. It has to be properly transcreated, created in a way so that the content has a chance to show up in search, AI search and regular search, right? It's not that hard, but this is something that most companies are asking for now. And I've been talking about this for a long time. I've been teaching this to localization companies, and I see a lack of adoption, right?
Are they learning? That's the question. You're teaching, fine, man.
I'm teaching, but it's up to them to implement it. I rarely see it that they actually do a good job with implementing it. That's a massive opportunity. Right. And then, you know, companies, they now need help with AI implementation, whether it's, you know, creating AI agents to do things more automated. That's a massive opportunity. That's now, we're doing this now as an, you know, SEO agency. That's why I said we're now an AI agency that happens to do SEO. Because everybody needs help with the implementation in terms of AI. Look for opportunities, you know, how it relates to language services. I guarantee you, you can easily create an agent that will do keyword transcreation, for example, or whatever it is that you currently offer. Try to find a way to infuse AI into it and then help your clients with that. So I would start there, but you got to pivot. You need to become, you know, an AI agency that happens to do localization, translation, language services.
Chris, I know like a lot of our listeners, for instance, they are happen to be maybe a localization buyer. I do have a lot of localization buyers from outside the industry looking inside the industry. Trying to understand it, trying to figure out what it is. It's intriguing to many people. Language, connecting people, demographics, solving communication problems. I noticed like in my statistics, I want to say about 70% of the viewers are brand new viewers to the to this channel. Yeah. Meanwhile, 30% are avid viewers that come from the industry. So, say for instance, a VP marketing for a global brand company. I don't know. I don't want to throw names in there, but let's say Procter & Gamble as an example, is using ChatGPT or Perplexity right now to research translation vendors. And, you know, obviously this is a normal behavior. People are going to ChatGPT and Perplexity and the likes to research potential vendors. How does a vendor get into that conversation?
Yeah. So one thing that AI technology is doing in general, it's helping businesses bring down the cost, right? So we used to charge $150 average per hour. Now we're closer to $100, right? And my goal is to offer our services even for less, with the help of AI, completely possible. A lot of my competitors, they're still charging, you know, $175, and we're able to offer more for less money. So what this technology is doing is putting a lot of pressure on price. You got to figure this out as a localization company, right? You got to be able to lower your costs with the help of this technology. It's going to give you a massive advantage. Sadly, localization translation has become very, very commoditized, right? That's just the way it is. So you got to find a way to be able to compete on price with the help of AI. So audit everything that you do at your business, at your localization company, and make it a point to, you know, automate, I don't know, 50, 60% by the end of the year. My goal, we're aiming for here at Bold SEO Marketing, 80% of everything that we do needs to be AI automated. Obviously, we're in a great position in that we have developed our AI SEO system. It's called Micro SEO.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about this one, but I realized we have many topics to cover.
Yeah.
I have Micro SEO on my...
Yeah, so even if you do a search for Micro SEO, you'll find this, but the website is microseo.ai. Mm-hmm. So you got to find ways to be very competitive and then look for services that your clients are looking for. I guarantee you a lot of even these bigger companies, they probably don't know how to create mm-hmm. agents that do certain things related to language, right? So those were probably two things that I would start to do right away.
Yeah. And, you know, I love the way you framed it, because most people, when you talk to them about AI, they feel like, oh, we're going to inject a human. But where do you inject a human? They don't have an answer. And if they do have an answer, it's very vague answer.
Yeah.
But so when you put a number on it, you say, look, why don't put a goal for this? 80-20. You know, say 80% of the work needs to be done by AI.
Yeah.
20% needs to be done by human. And even if you deviate a little bit from that, but at least now you have a goal to work toward.
Yeah, so, you know, you got to have a goal to achieve something, right? Mm. My wife and I, we hiked Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania last year in September. You know, we did a lot of hiking in Colorado for the entire year before, because I know I wanted to get to the top of that mountain, and we both made it. I barely made it. But that's what you need to do. You need to have a goal and then have a plan on how to get there. And it's not that hard, to be honest. Just set your goal and then try to get there. It's okay if you don't completely achieve everything, but at least have a goal.
Okay, so I'm realizing, cognizant of the time here, say where we are right now. So I think it's about an hour in.
Yeah.
I do have one more wrap-up question, and we'll do the closing, if you don't mind, Chris.
Yeah.
Unless you have something else in mind you want to share with the community.
Oh God, I can talk about this for days. So let's do one more question.
So one of the things I found out about, I'm not sure if it's still true though, but you teach at University of Strasbourg. What are you telling the next generation of marketeers and SEO professionals to prepare for right now? I guess I'm trying to get it with this question, is the vision forward.
Yeah. Oh man, thank you so much for this question. So I just concluded a semester. So last year, I used tools to check if they used AI to generate the content. I completely redid my program. So they had to use AI to generate the content the right way, right? So I spent probably like 3-4 days developing a system that I taught them, pretty complex, on how to use AI to generate the content. I can't go into too much detail, but I'm so thrilled to announce that my class, they killed it. They got it. They did so well. I'm so happy. And this
Congrats.
This is what these people need, right? There's no point of me telling them, oh, you can't use AI to do this. The reality is, like, we're doing it here at my company. We use AI to create content that actually ranks at the top in these search engines, right? So I wanted to show them how to do this, because this is what companies are looking for in people like them, right? So that's what I taught them. And I just graded all the papers, and really, they truly did an incredible job. And I'm so thrilled that I was able to teach them something that's hopefully going to be able to help them advance their careers.
Now, you reminded me, because there was something on the news here in the Toronto area, that's where I am right now in Canada. Yeah. And there was this university professor who did a test for, you know, doing a usual semester, end of semester test. And he noticed that 90% of his students, they got an A on a class that he normally, nobody gets an A in it.
Yeah, yeah.
So he got suspicion. And then he ended up doing what you just articulated for us, explained to us, Chris. He did the AI or no AI test, and he found out that it is AI and supposed to be a closed book test. So most of the students used AI. And so he said he thought to revise the how he delivers the tests for next year. But so, at the end of the semester, they all got an A.
That's actually what I spoke about in Berlin a few weeks ago. And on the Chris Ralph website, there's a blog post where I created a simplified version of what I'm teaching at the University of Strasbourg. So I'll share with you that link as well, right below. It includes all of the prompting, the entire methodology in a very simplified way. You can also just search for Universal Content Engine. Universal Content Engine.
You'll find that.
But we'll share that link. And it's fun. You know, it does the trick. It does what it's supposed to do.
I appreciate it. And Chris, I want to thank you so much. What do you think of the conversation? Your first time with me.
Obviously, you're a very seasoned podcast host. Thank you so much. I do hope that, you know, the listeners are getting value out of what we discussed here. If you have any questions, look me up on LinkedIn. I do a weekly AI SEO LinkedIn newsletter. So if you get to my profile, just click subscribe, connect with me. Let me know that you heard this.
I just sent you a connection request. I hope it's okay.
Oh, perfect. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I can't believe we weren't connected yet.
We weren't connected.
Yeah, no, thank you so much.
I'll tag you in my posts. So when I publish the episode, I mean, I will tag you in everything I do. I'll tag John as well. So
yes,
everybody's aware of what we're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation. I got to go and pack. I'm leaving for Europe in a few hours.
Let me wrap it up. Let me do the closing, and we'll let you off the hook pretty quickly here. Cool. I want to thank you. I want to thank Chris and for joining me today on behalf of myself and the audience. Thank you for joining us on this journey. We're recording episode, I think it's episode 231. Don't quote me on this one.
Wow.
But I really appreciate it. And also I want to say hello to all of our listeners in Germany. I hear our listeners in Germany, number of listeners in Germany is growing like crazy. So thank you for listening and thank you for tuning in. If you're watching us on YouTube, thanks for watching. On LinkedIn, thanks for keeping us in mind. And also, if you come in on our audio channels, thanks for listening in. Also, keep an eye on my blog post, robinayoub.blog, where I summarize these conversations into an archivable form. So you can do research, you can go back and check out other guests. But for now, I want to thank Chris. I want to thank the audience. And thank you so much for joining me on this episode. I'll see you at the next one. Thank you, Chris. Just hang in there one second, okay? Excellent. Now, I want to make sure you've uploaded.